early days of Reg NMS, they were picking, it was easy money. It was like crypto circa, 5 years ago. That's how easy it was for HFCs to make money because they were so much faster than everybody else. They built these, special networks as outlined in Michael Lewis's book, Flash Boys. But since then, competitive forces have come about. It's actually been a lot tougher for those HFTs because they're competing against each other. Their costs went up, but they don't stop. I mean, they're continuing to build, microwave networks and trying to do things faster than everybody else. The exchanges are certainly in bed with them, the major exchanges. They give them special order types to do certain things. They give them special rebate tiers. So all of this inner disgusting market plumbing is still there. And that's kind of where, that's why we're here today talking about new proposals, because Chair Gensler of the SEC understands all what I just said, and he wants to change some things.
Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart. Recently, I ran a replay video of my earlier interview with Joe Saluzzi, covering how high-frequency trading works and underscoring how it disadvantages and preys upon the unsuspecting retail investor. I ran that video because after years of seemingly turning a blind eye to the exploitation of our financial system by HFTs, the SEC has just proposed a sweeping set of rule changes designed to better level the playing field. Since the SEC posted its proposed market structure reforms for public feedback, Joe's been busy plowing through all 1,600 pages of them to make sense of it all for us. And now we'll hear his assessment. Joe, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, Adam, thanks for having me. And I'll admit right off, I haven't finished all 1,600, but we're getting there.
Okay. Well, thank you for doing that hard work and sparing us the trouble and the pain of having to slog through all that. I want to get into what you're learning from all that. Real quick, just to start at a very high level, what is your current assessment of the integrity and fairness of today's financial markets?
There are still numerous problems, right? And we've talked about this for years, and has it gotten better? There are still games. There are still, tons of stuff that go on beneath the surface, which we'll probably talk about later, that have been out there forever, that are kind of cloaked. So can it be better? Yes. Is it good? Yeah, it's good. It's better than a lot of other ones around the world, that's for sure. But can it be better? Absolutely.
Okay, great. And, I mentioned in the introduction that I recently reran our earlier interview that we did, where we kind of went in depth on all of the kind of major issues around HFTs and a lot of the technologies that we're going to be talking about in today's video. You do a great job of kind of giving a layman's explanation in the background of some of these things like dark pools and whatnot that sound very murky and hard for the average person to understand. So folks, if you're watching this and want to get that rooting beforehand or after you watch this video, I'll put up a link to it right here. All right, Joe. So let's just start kind of from the beginning. How did the US market get to where we are now? We have some of these issues that you talked about. Yeah, they're not the worst in the world, but they sure could be a lot better. How do we evolve to where we are right now?
It's been pretty much 15 years since what they had called Reg NMS, which was a major overhaul back in 2007. And since then, the unintended consequences, the issues that popped up with that rule, so that was an SEC rule, things like fragmentation, having 16 stock exchanges and over two dozen dark pools, conflicted order routing by brokers, payment for order flow, stock exchange rebates, special order types, proprietary data feeds, I can go on and on. All of these things had pretty much popped up since Reg NMS. And initially, they were used by the HFT gang or the high frequency traders who, early days of Reg NMS, they were picking, it was easy money. It was like crypto circa, 5 years ago. That's how easy it was for HFTs to make money because they were so much faster than everybody else. They built these, special networks as outlined in Michael Lewis's book, Flash Boys. But since then, competitive forces have come about. It's actually been a lot tougher for those HFTs because they're competing against each other. Their costs went up, but they don't stop. I mean, they're continuing to build, microwave networks and trying to do things faster than everybody else. The exchanges are certainly in bed with them, the major exchanges. They give them special order types to do certain things. They give them special rebate tiers. So all of this inner disgusting market plumbing is still there. And that's kind of where, that's why we're here today talking about new proposals, because Chair Gensler of the SEC understands all what I just said, and he wants to change some things.
Okay. And maybe we'll get more into this later on, but you know, Chair Gensler, this Gary Gensler, who's now the head of the SEC, he used to be head of the CFTC. He used to teach at MIT. I'm sure he's had other positions, you know, in government as well that I'm not remembering at the moment. How good of a job is he doing right now? Like, is he the right guy for this job?
For this one, I think he is. This is a tough one. This is going to be the market structure proposal. You wonder, since 2007, why hasn't the SEC really done anything big? They're afraid to touch it. This gets the industry. You want to work up Wall Street and the industry around it, you put it through a major proposal like this. They're already filing lawsuits and thinking about filing lawsuits, and their lawyers are working overtime. This is not going to be easy. So what I think part of it actually started with the meme stock events. So, you know, once Congress got involved with those hearings after the, you know, a year and a half ago, almost 2 years now, I guess, the meme stock events, the SEC had to do something. They were, you know, the Congress was saying, hey, this is ridiculous payment for order flow, retail investors are getting screwed here, whatever it was. So he looked at it and he does understand. Is he the right person? Yes. He understands. He obviously understands the commodity markets. He worked at Goldman Sachs too, by the way. He understands Wall Street. He understands how they work, but it's not going to be easy for him. And we can see him lining up, and all different factions are lining up against this in various ways. Everybody has their own book to, you know, their own thing that they're trying to sell. So it will be tough. I think Mr. Gensler is tough also, and I think he will push back hard. Problem that he's going to run into is that the Congress, which is now changing, House Financial Services Committee, there's a new chairperson coming in. They will bring him in front of the Congress and say, hey, you know, what's going on? They're going to really pepper him. So we'll see where this thing ends up. We haven't even talked about some of the details, but my end result, it will get neutered somehow, but we'll see how much.
Okay. And we're going to get in all the details here, but maybe mashing two questions together here. I'm presuming the reason why he's getting so much resistance from, you know, Wall Street and the financial ecosystem is because the big players have been using all these technologies to their advantage in the past. And obviously they don't want to give up that advantage. They also have gazillions of dollars invested in this, right? That they've, you know.
Oh, huge, billions. Yeah.
Yeah. But is it a good thing, even if the ultimate changes that may get made aren't 100% of what we'd like to see? Is this finally bringing kind of a dark practice that benefited, you know, the few deep-pocketed, you know, players and banks into the sunlight in a place where, you know, it's going to get reformed in a positive direction?
Yeah. I mean, the good thing is certainly that everybody is now understanding market structure plumbing. So if you ask me if anything comes out of this, that's 100% great, because the more people understand, the more they wonder, hey, is this really the best market? Do I need this? Because the market makers told me it was, and they told me that the equity markets have never been better and that the U.S. investor has never had it better. They keep telling me that, right? Well, no, that's not true. That's not true. They, you know, Chair Gensler, they said he's concerned about fairness and competition, the segmentation and concentration of order flow. These are his words. And even in a speech, he said that payment for order flow is a conflicted thing and it causes problems with order routing. So he understands the problem. But like I said before, to touch this, it is really difficult to change, because like you said, there's so much money already invested in. In fact, Citadel last week, which is one of the biggest market makers, published something in the Wall Street Journal basically saying, well, you know, we're against one of the proposals. They're against this access fee, the tick size thing, which we could talk about. So they're already staking their ground. So you can see the players lining up. And like you said, the model's been built. They don't want the model messed with. And Chair Gensler is messing with the model, and he's going to run into the Wall Street crowd soon, and we'll see how that ends up.
All right. So I want to quickly get to what are the proposed SEC market structure reforms. But real quick, I mean, you sort of briefly mentioned the, you know, meme stock excesses maybe being a trigger, but why is the SEC getting involved now? You know, after so many years of inactivity, what has gotten Gensler to finally take on what you've said, what you're saying is going to be a really bloody fight for him.
Yeah, I do think that was the stimulus. That was the main event. The main event was, you know, three hearings by Congress saying, hey, the retail investors getting screwed here. And I do think a lot of retail investors actually are speaking up. And it's funny, I took a look at some of the when these proposals come out, the comment period opens immediately. And there are hundreds, I think, already letters by retail investors, and most of them are fairly short, but actually coming on board saying, yeah, this is ridiculous. I want something done. So they're complaining. The retail investor, even though it's a smaller segment of the equity market, you know, 20, 25%, depending on how you count it, they're upset about what happened. Now, whether or not there are certain things I agree with, you know, the retail crowd, and there's certain things I think they may have it wrong, and I hope maybe I could help explain it. I've been doing this for a long time. I trade for institutions, but I'm a retail investor myself. I understand what they're saying. I understand what the problems are. And in fact, institutions, when you think about it, you know, think about the biggest institutions out there. They represent retail. Those are mutual funds, right? They are retail. You might have your money in a 401k. Well, even though that's an institution, he represents the retail. So
right.
Those are the guys that we trade for. Those are the guys who really understand this stuff as well. And we're all fighting for the same thing, fair and competitive markets.
Good. And you and I have talked about this in your past appearances on this program. But yeah, when we're sort of talking about the retail investor getting the short end of the stick here, yes, it's individual retail investors who were buying these meme stocks and whatnot. But it's also the big institutions that trade on behalf of the institutional investor, right? The pension funds, the big 401, you know, where 401k money lies, right? These are the, you can correct this, but this is kind of the I don't want to call it the dumb money in the system, but like, you know, in this world of all these technologies we're talking about, you have the big deep pocketed players who have invested in all these technologies to gain an advantage. And they're essentially preying on everybody else that doesn't have all this weaponry built up, right? And so I think you might have even analogized this to like, you know, sharks and whales, where like, you know, these big pension funds and 401k funds are like whales swimming through the financial markets. Yeah. And these weaponized firms are out there just taking bites all along the way. They're not necessarily killing the whale. They almost don't want to. They just want to make sure whenever they want to take a bite and get what they can, they do. Right.
Okay. Yeah, so you're not. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And then, you know, they're picking off pennies and here pieces here and there, but that does add up to cost. And, you know, if you're an institutional investor, you're not only worried about stock picking and what how you're going to help your investors long term, but you should be worried about your trading cost every day. You know, the reason why I'm in business is all I do is execute trade for institutional clients. And we don't use the high tech, some of the sophisticated stuff that some of the others do. We use our own trading style. We know, I've been around for a long time. I know when I'm getting picked off and when someone's out there trying to figure out where I am, and I'm trying to cloak myself the whole day. So it's a constant game of cat and mouse that we play. And what's interesting about our style, and just to promote it a little, it's random. This is the funniest thing in the world. People say, what's your style? How are you still in business 20 years later? You're a small firm. You shouldn't be here anymore. Algos took over. I'm like, you know what my secret is? We randomize and we pay attention. You pay attention to the tape. You watch what's going on. Obviously, the economies of scale there are kind of, you bump into a problem after a while. But if you do a good job, you can still outsmart the computers. You can still work around them. And I know all the tricks. I know what their tricks are. And I can kind of avoid them. And they still get me once in a while. Of course, they're going to find their ways around it. But it is a game. And it's a game that it's cat and mouse, pretty much.
Right. And what you're doing, your approach is doing is basically, you're not appearing like a whale. And you're not appearing at the times that the sharks are expecting prey to appear. And that's how you're sort of evading all of this.
Right. You know, what's funny is that a lot of folks use what they call schedule-based algorithms, which are throughout the day, that maybe it's a VWAP, a volume-weighted average price. It goes in and back. And here it comes again, what they call the parent order, which is the big order. And then the child order comes out all day long. And after a while, those child orders are pretty much spotted by the sharks and will just take advantage of them. So you don't want to do anything scheduled if you're trading like on a sizable amount. You have to kind of randomize. And then you have to bounce around different venues. You can't just sit on one venue. You know, our favorite venue is IEX because we think that we get the best fills there in the middle of the market without the leakage that you have on these other places. And the reason being is they don't have what they call an order by order data feed, where all these other ones sell these data feeds to those high frequency traders. And that's the biggest key, by the way. I think we talked about the last time is it's the fuel that this engine of market structure, right? The fuel that gets it is the data. So if the exchanges weren't giving away constant order by order data, And every time I touch a key, they can sell it, basically. If they weren't doing that, I'd have a better chance. So IEX doesn't do that. I feel much more comfortable there. My fields are much better there. And we're also in different dark pools. There's a couple of good ones that we really like that we get, you know, decent sized block pieces as well. But you got to know the ins and outs. And like I said, I've been doing this for a long time, so I kind of have our own approach to it.
Okay, well, fascinating. And folks, sorry for kind of diving down that very specific hole, but it's super fascinating. And it gives you a sense of the lengths you have to go to not get picked off by the predators in this space. All right, well, back to the key question at hand, Joe. You know, we talked about this 1,600-page set of rule change proposals that have been put out by the SEC. Are you at this point able to summarize what their principal recommended market structure improvements are?
Yeah, we can do that. There's four. What's interesting about the proposal is it's not one behemoth where it's all or none. There are four different proposals that they're going to put through, that they've put through. Each one will get voted on by the SEC independently. So in other words, two of the four may pass and get set up for, you know, then, you know, a year or two from now, actually go live. Two of the four may fail or get rejected or may get, you know, revised along the way. Of the four, we think two are going to be not so controversial and change. They will change the way trading is done. Two of them are very, very significant. Two of the others are not as significant. We think they're more, one is just kind of playing around with some extra disclosures and so on. And the other one could be something, and I'll get to that later. But let's talk about the two that I think are really a big deal. And the first one is called the Enhanced Retail Order Competition. I've got a couple notes here, so I might be looking down a little.
Sure.
But that's the one where the market makers and the retail investors and the retail brokers are going to have a fit. So essentially, what they're going to do is right now, if you're a retail trader and you send your order and you hit the button, I want to buy 100 shares of XYZ, it will go to the broker, and most likely that broker is going to send that order to a market maker. Over 90% of marketable orders of retail are filled by market makers. There's about six large market makers that handle this. Two of them are really the biggest. That order gets routed, and sometimes it's paid for by the market makers to execute. Sometimes it's not, okay? But it goes and it doesn't interact with the market itself. So in other words, if I'm sitting there on the offer list, or say I'm in the middle of the spread on a dark pool or an IEX or whatever, and someone wants to come along and pay the offer, I'll never interact with that order because it's being segmented off of this exchange system that we've built with 16 stock exchanges and over two dozen dark pools, and instead goes to a market maker. The market maker will fill it, and probably with either a sub penny price improvement or a little bit more than that, probably certainly not midpoints. I don't see too many midpoints, but they will fill that order. Sometimes it will be size improved. And market makers like to make a big deal about this, where if the offer is only 200 shares and you're coming in to buy 500, they'll give you all 500 because it's part of their model. They want that retail flow and they don't want to disappoint that retail broker. So what the SEC is saying now is say, wait a second, that order should get a chance to interact with everybody who wants to interact with it and maybe price improve it. So for instance, me, who I represent institutional investors, maybe I want to get in on this. So they're going to create an auction system where this order will pass through the auction first, if it's a qualified order as a retail order, and it will take a pit stop there for about 100 milliseconds or so, 100, 300 milliseconds. If it is filled, by price improved by someone on the auction, it's filled. If not, it will then get exhausted maybe to one of the market makers or to an exchange. I barely touched the surface of what this thing is going to be. Okay. It is really complicated, okay? Which is why I don't think it's going to get done. Two reasons why this is not going to get done. One, the market maker is going to line up and the retail brokers are lining up against it saying, oh my, you got it all wrong, guys. You don't want to do this. And two, it's extremely complex. It'll take, I don't know how much to build this thing. There'll be multiple competing auctions. It's going to get sticky really fast, okay? Even if somehow the SEC were to approve it, they have lawsuits lined up already to knock this thing down. So, and Chair Gensler, he'll probably be around for a couple more years. I hope he's around longer than that. But these lawsuits will outlast him. It'll be going on forever. It'll drag the SEC down. You know, if you ask me, maybe they put this out there as just kind of a negotiating factor where they this is the one that they really want. They do want this, but they know it's going to be tough to pass.
Okay. So before we move on off from this one, let's say it did pass.
Okay.
How how material would this be in terms of savings to the retail side of the book?
Well, it's interesting because the market makers will claim that they've saved billions of dollars for retail investors in something called price improvement, $3 billion, $4 billion, whatever the number might be. And the price improvement is simply the amount that they're improving the NBBO or the National Best Bidder Offer. The stock is, say, $10 bid offered at $10.02 and you want to buy it, they fill you at $10.019. So they gave you a tenth better than the offer. What the SEC is saying is that same stock, there might be an offer at $10.01. So you, instead of getting $10.019, maybe you should have gotten $10.01. And according to the SEC, they've done their own numbers, and they're coming up with about $1.5 billion in extra savings for the retail investor if this system were to go in place. I don't know how they did the math, okay? This is their math. Yeah. It's somewhere in that 1,600 pages.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but just to ask, like $1.9 billion, I think you said?
Billion and a half.
Is that a big amount related to all the trading that goes on?
Not notionally, no, but when the market makers like to say, hey, we saved $3 billion, well, then that's 50% more than that, right? So I guess, you know, if you take that $3 billion plus another one, I don't know how you count the numbers, but it's funny math too. It's how you make up the numbers, I don't know, like I said. But either way, there are certainly opportunities in between the spread there, particularly on the larger spread stocks. Otherwise, why market makers? Here's the question I always ask myself. I always ask people: if market makers are willing to pay to provide a service, right? They're paying you, paying the retail broker to provide the service. There must be an opportunity for them to make money, right? And that's what the SEC is trying to extract that away from the wholesaler or the market maker and give it back to the retail investor. This is one of the ways that they came up with doing it. Now, there's these four proposals. They're going to start to interact with each other. So in and itself, by itself, maybe that could work. But when I tell you about the next proposal, then things start to get really hairy and really complicated. And then like, oh my God, wait a second. Maybe these aren't all going to work, right? They're all not going to work together. It's just too complicated. You know, as it is, the equity market, it should be a very simple thing. You want to buy, you want to sell, let's be done. You know, why do we have to go through this maze of 16 stock exchanges, 37, whatever, dark pools? It should be easy. If these proposals went through as is, it would be a lot more complicated and a lot more confusing, unfortunately. But there are things to do. I think they can tweak these things to simplify them a little, which could help the market.
Okay. All right. Well, you made a tease about the second one, so let's jump in there.
Okay. Second one is called the minimum. Are you ready? Minimum pricing increments, access fees, and transparency of better priced orders. It's a lot to say. There's really two parts to it. Okay. The first is a tick size change. So in other words, right now in the United States, the minimum tick size is 1 cent. In other words, when you want to price a stock, you can only go up and down 1 cent, assuming the stock is over $1 per share. You can go 10.01, 10.02, 10.03, 10.04. That's the displayed quote. I can't go in between that. So what you find is a lot of stocks will be penny wide spreads. There'll be 10.01 bid offered at 10.02, 10.01, 10.02, and there'll be lots of liquidity or volume on both sides. You can't collapse that spread because it's illegal to quote in sub pennies in the US unless the stock is under $1. So the proposal is this: let's do three more ticks. So smaller ticks. And the three are a half a penny, 0.2 of a penny, and 0.1 of a penny. This gets ugly really quick because now you're saying, and that what they're going to propose is based on the average spread of the stock, we're going to say if the average spread, and I'll give you some of the numbers, if the average spread is equal to or less than 0.8 of a penny, then it's going to be a 0.1 of a penny tick. If it's between 0.8 of a penny and 0.6, it's 0.2. If it's between 0.6 and 0.4, it's a half a penny. Anything over 4 cents stays at a penny. There's a lot of numbers there, I know. But the bottom line is they're trying to shrink the quote to make it tighter. So that'll have a number of issues. First of all, market makers don't want 0.1 of a penny. Okay, so some of them have already come out and said, that's stupid. Why would you want to do 0.1 of a penny? You're going to create all this excess noise and fragmentation and flickering. They're right there. The one thing I've agreed with the market makers overall, I can't remember the last time I've agreed with them, is that 0.1 of a penny is ridiculous. It should not go down there. You're just going to cause flickering, sub-penny jumping. Message traffic's going to explode. It's going to be crazy. And HFTs are going to love it. The true HFT is going to be the parties back on, just like it was 2007 again. So not a good idea. Maybe 2/10 of a penny, still not a good idea. I think it's too small. Half a penny, a lot of the industry is agreeing on, might be good for certain stocks. What this also does is it not only takes the tick, but it takes the trade price. It harmonizes the two. In other words, these crazy prices that you might be getting, if you're a retail trader and you get an execution and it says you bought that stock at 10.01999, well, what the heck is that? Well, the SEC is saying no more of that stuff. Only where you, where the tick is, that's where you have to price the trade. So in other words, if the tick size is a half a penny, you can't price it less than a half a penny unless it's a midpoint, that's a quarter of a penny, but we won't talk about that. But so that's the tick, right? And they're saying, okay, we want to change that. They didn't talk about one of my pet peeves on the small cap stocks, which I think deserve wider ticks. A lot of these small caps, there's no liquidity in. We trade them all day long. There's nothing. And all it takes is a penny for someone to jump ahead of somebody else. We think that should actually cost you more to jump ahead of me, especially on a small to stocks that trade 100,000, 200,000 shares a day. It wasn't in the proposal. I was kind of disappointed. A lot of folks on Wall Street have come up with these proposals. The CBO, actually, the Chicago Board of Exchange, came up with a great one. And it was, you know, some sort of smart tick, depending. And they did have widening in there, but that's not in this proposal. So if you change tick sizes, right, think about all the different quotes that are going to be coming through, especially if they're a tenth of a penny. That's a big problem, in my opinion. The second half of the proposal is access fees. And this is really, and now I'm going to get into the real dirty, nitty gritty of market structure.
Okay, hey, real quick, yeah. Before we do access fees, yeah. Just what problem does potentially breaking the ticks into these smaller amounts solve for the retail investor here? What advantage does it give them?
They will claim that you'll get a better price because here's where it's interesting. I think the SEC came up with this as a way to get rid of the wholesaling retail broker model without banning payment for order flow. So if you reduce the tick down to it, just like I was saying before, market makers are complaining. If you reduced it down to a tenth of a penny, they can't make any money off of it the way they're making it now. So you're going to squeeze the market makers at that. But to your question, how does it affect the retail? I don't think it makes that much of a difference right now if a stock is a penny or a tenth of a penny. I mean, if you're buying 100 shares and you're paying 10.02, would you rather pay 10.019? You know, it's just going to muck up the infrastructure even more. And like I said, my argument is I think we should even widen some of these ticks in order to get more liquidity and better price discovery, which people don't talk about. How does a price get set? It's getting set right now by the market makers and not really the institutions in the retail because they're afraid to set it and they're not putting their quotes out there. And in the end, here's a good point too. Whose currency are we trading here? It's public corporations. They're the ones who should be really in this discussion, which they never are, by the way. I don't know why they don't wake up and say, hey, that's my stock you're talking about.
Right.
I'm the investor relations officer or the chief financial officer of XYZ company. You know, maybe I should get involved in this conversation also. So I don't think the tenth of a penny is going to solve the issue of a retail investor now.
Okay. All right. Sorry to interrupt, but it doesn't sound like that component of this second proposal is doing all that much for the retail investor. You mentioned it might be kind of a backdoor way to outlaw payment for order flow. Yeah. I don't want to derail you from explaining this second one, but in a bit, I might ask you just to redefine what payment for order flow is for the folks that don't know what that is, but finish on here with the access fees.
Right. Well, this is kind of like payment for order flow. It's the access fees and what they call rebates are what the stock exchanges came up with years ago to entice liquidity into their venue. So for somebody like me, they say, hey, would you like to post liquidity on my exchange? We'll pay you up to 0.3 cents if you did that. And if you take liquidity off my exchange, we're going to charge you an access fee of 0.3 cents or less, depending on the size of your client. You know, they get volume discounts and so on. In 2007, the SEC capped the access fee at 0.3 cents. We don't know why that was the number. That happened to be the number they came up with. So now the proposal is, let's get rid of those access fees or drop them down to 0.1 cents or maybe even 5 mils, which is 0.05 cents, depending on the tick size of that stock. So they're going to reduce the access fees, which is a good thing. Okay, but I think what they should have went one step further and got rid of rebates altogether. Rebates, because there still will be rebates. So think about this. If 0.3 cents was the access fee before and maybe 30 mils, 0.3 was a rebate, soon as they drop down to a tenth of a penny, the rebate's not going to be more than a tenth of a penny either, because they can't. Otherwise, the exchanges won't make any money. Right. There's usually like a 2 or 4 mil capture in between that, you know, access fee and rebate. So the rebate will come down. My opinion, get rid of rebates altogether. And in fact, we think exchanges deserve to make money, and they should get a take. They should make 10 mils whether I make or take stocks. Here's, I'm willing to pay you a tenth of a penny if I add liquidity or take liquidity. I think it's a better model because it takes out the conflict of interest of me trying to collect rebates and just not doing the right thing when it comes to execution quality. That's another story, right?
Got it. And I'm sorry, is this whole thing with rebates and access fees, is that sort of an artifact that we have this very fractured system of these multiple stock exchanges and whatnot, where they're in competition with each other, so they're trying to entice people to bring capital onto their exchange rather than take it off?
Yeah, exactly, which is kind of ridiculous when you think about it. A stock exchange is more of like a utility, in my opinion. You know, I my gas company is PSE&G, my power company is JCP&L. Yeah, there are some alternatives out there, but those are utilities that I pay for a service of bringing, you know, electricity and gas to my house. Stock exchanges match buyers and sellers. They don't commit capital. It's not like the crypto world where stock exchanges are not exactly exchanges, right?
Right.
The stock exchanges buy and sell, they match people. That's all they do. They're matchmakers. And they do a very good job at that. So they should get paid for that. And I'm recommending a raise, a tenth of a penny for make or take. But what happened was they wanted to attract more liquidity and get higher market share. The reason they want to do that is so they could sell other products like their data, like their co-location facilities, like their ports and so on. Because even if they made zero amount of money on trading, they'll make a ton of money if the market share goes up, because more people need to connect to them and get access to that data. So the critical feature for a stock exchange is you need some market share, you need some action there, because you want everyone connecting and paying all those ridiculous data fees that they charge every month. So,
okay. And so I don't want to get super sidetracked here, but you're putting your finger on a really important point here, right? Which is so much of what the SEC is now beginning to turn around and start to try to clean up here is because of this. There's a term I like to use called malincentive, where you have these sort of perverse incentives that lead to behavior that ultimately you don't want to have in the system here, right? And you just described how, you know, these access fees and rebates were sort of an artifact of these individual exchanges competing with one another because they wanted to gain market share. Because if you did gain market share, well, then you could make the real money by selling that data to these big players to then develop their predatory advantage they can use to take, you know, steal the lunch of everybody else, right?
And why is the search engine for free? They don't want you, because they're going to make money off the back end. That's the same thing.
Right. Okay. So is there more to the second part, or do we kind of know?
That's the high level part. I mean, obviously we can get to, you know, to the details of it, but that's the issue, you know, where, like I said, I'm in favor of getting rid of that altogether. I think it should just be a flat fee. In my comment letter, which I'll write before the end of March, comments are due, by the way, end of March. I highly recommend everybody comment if there's something in here that's interesting to you, because the SEC reads them all. They will read every single one of them. But I'll recommend that they should go to a flat take fee, and they should, you know, just get rid of this ridiculous system, which causes all sorts of order routing conflicts. This is the stock exchange version, getting back to something you said before, of payment for order flow. They are paying for that flow to come to their exchange, just like market makers are paying for that retail flow to come off the exchange and into their hip pocket. Everybody wants to look at the flow, right? Everybody wants that flow. And it's your flow, Mr. Retail Investor, and my flow, Mr. Institutional Agency Broker, that they want to take a peek at.
All right. Makes total sense. Okay. So those are the first two. I think you said those were the ones that would have the more impact, but they're probably the least likely ones to pass given the empire striking back here.
The first one's going to be tough. The second one, what we just mentioned, the access fees and the tick size, that will pass in some form.
Oh, I don't think,
not in a form that it's in right now. I personally think that they're going to get rid of those tenth of a penny. They should probably just keep it at a half a penny tick. And I'd love to see them, like I said, go to a wider thing, but it's never going to happen. They're not going to go. So say they went to a half a penny with a harmonization. I don't know how they're going to harmonize the tick and trade at that point. That's going to be an issue. But something in this line will get passed. That first one, I doubt you'll ever see a retail order auction out there.
Okay. All right, well, let's move on to the third one, but I will opine for a moment here. It is good that attention is coming to this, and that the public's getting involved, and that hopefully some kind of reform will come out of this. But kind of reacting to what you're saying and kind of your tone and body language, it's kind of like, there's a gang on the block that's beating everybody up and shaking them down for their money. And the community authorities are getting involved, and they're kind of, negotiating with the gang, and they're kind of like, okay, so you'll have to take the barbed wire off the bats you hit us with. And, you've been standing on this corner 24/7. What if you just stand in it for 20 hours of the day, right? Like, so it's not a vast reduction in the abuse that's going on.
Well, I'll take it one step further. So this gang that you're talking about, what they're going to say to the police is, listen, we're protecting the neighborhood. If we're not here, no one's here to protect the neighborhood. In other words, the market maker is going to say, we're going to pull out liquidity. If you put these new rules in place, we're not going to play your game anymore. And we're not going to add, air quotes, liquidity, because it's not liquidity. It comes and goes. It's very fickle. So they're going to threaten. And then they're going to tell the retail brokers, you go threaten your clients that your commission rates are going to go higher because you're not getting zero commissions anymore if this goes through. So then, and all of a sudden, oh my God, I got to pay $10. They're not, the threats alone will be enough to shut this thing down.
And that's so interesting. And you and I, again, Pat, previous conversations have opined, and I believe I'm remembering correctly, but correct me if I'm wrong, is going back to a fee-based commission system, at least for retail investors, maybe it's different in your world of many trades for big institutions, but might not be the worst thing in the world. If it means getting rid of the whole payment for order flow abuses and people running the head of the trades and all that type of stuff, because it makes the investor much more mindful of the trade they're going to place, right?
I agree.
Okay. Just like with investing, when the cost of capital is zero, like it was practically for many years, you get a ton of malinvestment because people don't really care that the downside risk is less. Whereas if there's a cost to actually taking the step, you got to make it a much more considered decision.
Right. But when you get addicted to the free stuff, just like we did with the Fed, look at the hissy fit the market throws after all of a sudden interest rates start going up and the market tanks.
Right.
Same thing would happen. People are addicted to those zero commissions. And for the average investor who trades 6 to 12 times a year, say, or a real investor, like I'm saying, a $10 fee on a retail broker, and I'm not a retail broker, so I wouldn't participate in that, I don't think would be a big deal. If you're an active day trader and you're trading 50, 100 stocks a day, well, then you should be concerned about what we're talking about right now, because that affects you more than the $10, because you're losing more money because of this corrupt system and broken market back there. If you figured out that part. So if you're an active trader, you really need to understand this stuff. But yeah, I don't think $10 a commission for a trader every once in a while, it shouldn't matter. But they are addicted to the zeros, that's for sure.
All right. Sorry for the sidebar there, but I think it was an instructive one. Okay, so now let's get to the third of the four proposed market structure changes.
So there's a couple more. One is called the disclosure of order execution. This isn't really a big deal. There are these rules called 605 rules, which basically brokers have to file the execution quality that they're giving to their market makers and retail brokers. It's a good thing, and more disclosure is a good thing. One thing I really liked about this is that right now, the reports are only kind of like in machine readable format, and it's tough for a regular investor to see what they actually look like. The SEC is saying, no. We want a real summary that real people can read of this, and we're requiring common sense, right? Total common sense. So that's a good thing. More disclosure, in my opinion, is always a good thing. Maybe even more than they're asking for, but some of the things are, different. What was the spread? What was the execution quality? All good stuff. So I'm not going to complain about that. I haven't heard anybody complain about that yet. It is a bit of a smoke show, but when the market makers, if you ask a market maker, oh, we like these rules. In particular, we like the disclosure rule because disclosure is a good thing. They hide under the disclosure. They got to hide over there and say, this is a good one, right?
Yeah.
We recommend this one. So don't get smokescreened here. This is nothing to do with market structure. This is after the fact reports on how it looks, but it's still good to know. You should be looking at this and seeing if your broker is doing the right thing, or he's out there just looking for payment for order flow and trying to not get the best execution, which brings us to the last rule, which is the SEC now proposing their own best execution rule. And I say their own is because currently FINRA, which is our self-regulatory organization as brokers, has a rule called 5310, which is a best execution rule, which is kind of guidance. It's a little bit tough to enforce because there are certain things you can and can. Best execution is tough to define because it means things differently to different people. For me, if I'm trading 100,000 shares of a stock and I see 100 shares offered at, say, 10 cents, and maybe I might bypass that. I don't want to trade that because I know if I lift that 10 cent offer, it's going to go to 12 cents and I got 100,000 more to do. So 100 shares doesn't help me any. So should I have taken the stock or then maybe later I pay 12 cents for 50,000 shares? I would say I'd rather buy the 50,000 at 12 cents. The best execution rules are a little bit vague. So what the SEC is trying to do is codify them some more. And I think what they're trying to do is use it as an enforcement tool. So, which is interesting because the FINRA doesn't really enforce their own best ex rule. It's, like I said, it's kind of fuzzy. The SEC now can use this as a weapon. So even if, you know, Mr. Market Maker and Mr. Retail Broker win their arguments on the first couple of proposals, if a best ex thing like this comes through and the SEC has something called a consolidated audit trail now, which took a decade to build. Okay. Yeah. You're going to have billions of dollars, but it's there now. And it sees a lot of things that they weren't seeing before. So this one to me is kind of interesting, even though it seems like a no-brainer. Some people are saying, well, wait a second, hold on. We already have a best ex rule and this is going to be too onerous. And now we're going to have to comply with all these things. And someone's going to get caught in a trap here. Well, yeah, there are going to be some guidances. And like I talked about before, different situations where some people believe it's best ex and some people don't. But overall, I think it gives them a weapon in their hip pocket to go after some folks who are bad guys who have been hiding. So I like that one a lot.
Okay. So is this a little bit sort of like the fiduciary rule for financial advisors where it sort of sets some guidelines, but it's kind of open interpretation. And then, you know, FINRA or whatever can come in and say, you know, the way that we're looking at this, we think that you violated it, right? So it might not be completely black and white for the players that need to abide by it, but it kind of forces them to err on the side of conservatism because they don't know exactly how it's going to be interpreted.
Right. And you're going to have quarterly reports and monthly reports and best execution policies, which is a compliance, you know, it takes time and so on. But hey, this is a role that we chose to be in as brokers. This is what I do. Okay. So if I have to file these reports, I'm going to file the reports. But they do, like FINRA constantly tweaks 5310. It's always being updated guidance and so on. So this, I would imagine, is going to kind of be a work in progress as well, where it'll come out and then they'll start to tweak it. But I'm hoping, I really do think that the games go on, not only in the equity markets, I think they go on across markets, options markets, futures markets, currency markets. It's hard to see across the different asset classes. What the CAT or the Consolidated Audit Trail will do is see across the equities and options market, not anything else, okay? But those two markets alone are gigantic. And the options market in particular, you talk about games, you talk about shenanigans. That market, which absolutely exploded in volume since the meme stock stuff and since the, you know, the Robinhood days and the gamification and everything else, how they interact with each other is going to be really interesting to see. And if they built a tool which took a decade and billions of dollars, and they can start to see across these markets, well, if I was a bad guy, I'd be very afraid because the SEC used to have maybe one camera on the bank vault and it was located behind a cabinet somewhere. Well, guess what? They just put 20 cameras on the vault and now they're all looking at you. So if you're the guy looking to rob you, you better be careful.
So that's really interesting. So, you and I have been talking long enough over the years, Joe, that, you know, I remember, you know, more or less when the cat was in the early days. And I might be misdescribing it here, but you sort of talk about the 16 different stock exchanges and the 30 different dark pools and whatnot. And I think one of your frustrations about the cat as it was being built was that probably by out of necessity, but they only had a few exchanges on it, or at least they only had visibility into a part of what was going on, right? So to your analogy, okay, yeah, they had a camera or two over in the corner of the warehouse, but you know, where all the majority of the good stuff was stored, nobody was watching and you could still be a bad guy over there and get away with it. Is it now a complete cat?
It is pretty much complete.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Yeah, and they are actually starting to, you know, come up with some stuff, I think, and see things differently now. What's interesting, and I think we talked about this the last time, when it was originally developed, there was a operating committee made up of all the exchanges who decided to pick the vendor who was going to build it. They picked a company called Thesis, which was an offshoot of TradeWorks, which is an HFT, was an HFT firm. And this company spent millions and millions of dollars and basically did nothing for years. It took forever. And they just dragged their feet. Finally, they gave up and FINRA took over and built it. FINRA actually built this thing. So what does that tell you right there? I mean, the fix was in from the beginning, right? So, but the SEC should have been smarter back then, and they weren't, and they allowed this stuff to go on and for years. But yeah, I think that they're going to see things. It's like turning on the lights, right? They're able to connect. They can see hidden order flow. For instance, on stock exchanges, 20% of the trades are done through hidden orders. So I place hidden orders all the time because I don't want to get picked off. But the cat can see that, right? The cat can see what's in the dark pools. The cat can see a lot of things. The cat can see the options market and start to tie things. And I'm betting they got some really smart data analysts over there who are going to tie these things together. And back in the day, when there was a problem, they would have to go to something called the blue sheets and all of these other different pieces and kind of quilt it together. Well, now they should be able to run a report pretty quickly to see if somebody's screwing around. Still not going to be, you know, easy, but I think they've done a big service there. And I think that will help when you talk about a best execution rule, lopping that on top. I'd be more afraid of that if I was a bad guy than anything else on these rules.
All right, cool. So our cat has developed night vision where they can see into these hidden and dark exchanges. That sounds great. It actually sounds like a solution that a regulator could use for enforcement. Is one of the main things they're looking for with that is like trade front running and stuff like that. Like we see in this exchange that you were making, you know, you knew this trade was going to happen and then you front run it on this exchange. Is that the kind of patching together that the cat does for you?
They could. I mean, I would think that the options market is going to be a big key to them. That the options market was so, everybody's blind into that thing. Nobody knows what's going on over there. I think that will help tie those two asset classes together. You know, front running in itself is a tough term because the HFT guys will say, we don't front run. We don't have any clients. How can we front run? And they're right. So, but they can penny you to death and keep jumping ahead of you, but that's legal, because that's the way the system's been built. And now with the 10th of a penny, they're basically saying to the HFTs, we're going to give you 10 times as many jumps per tick, which is crazy, right? So that's not illegal per se. It's not, it should be in my opinion, but it's not because it's not front running. So can they catch that? No, but can they catch other things? I think so. I think they'll be able to find some things, you know, if there's, who knows? We'll see. We'll see what kind of cases. If all of a sudden, here's the test. If you start to see the SEC coming up with filing new enforcement actions much more quickly on things like that, then you know it's working.
Then you know they're seeing stuff. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, look, we've batted around payment for order flow a fair amount. Can you just give the very quick description of that and then answer why a ban on payment for order flow wasn't made part of this? Because I know that was probably a big inspiration for a lot of this reform.
Yeah. So payment for order flow basically is when a retail broker takes that order from the client and sells it to a market maker. And the market maker may pay, you know, whatever it might be, different types of fees for it. And then the market maker will fill that order, execute it, sometimes size improve it, and it will go to the tape. You know, you'll see an instantaneous trade. But that's this whole system. But the order is never making it onto an exchange. It bypasses the entire maze of the U.S. stock market and instead gets traded off exchange. Market makers will pay for the right to see retail order flow. Why do they do that? Well, they can explain it better than I can. We think it's to gather more intelligence and get a better picture of what's going on out there. They're not doing it because they're just these great benefactors and love people and want to just give you great fills. That's not why they're doing it, okay? So anyway, that was at the center controversy of the GameStop, meme stock events. You know, zero commissions don't exist at retail brokers unless they're making money somewhere else. So firms like Robinhood, a good chunk of their money was being made from payment for order flow.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much was their main business model,
yeah.
Right?
And those guys who developed it, by the way, were two ex-HFT programmers. So they know the game. Okay. they knew the game, how it worked. They knew everything that we've talked about so far. They know everything about that. So they knew the the inner mechanics. If you know anything about any industry and you know the inner mechanics of how it really works, you can develop a model to make some money. And this is what those guys did. They figured it out. They said, hey, we can just basically sell it. They weren't even a member of an exchange. Robinhood, up until, I don't even know if they are now, they have no memberships. How could you be a major retail broker and have no memberships in a stock exchange? It makes no sense, because they would just ship all the flow to these market makers, charge zero, and get paid on the back end for not only stocks as well as and options. Some brokers don't accept order flow, payment for order flow. A lot of them don't, but then they're getting paid in other ways. Maybe it's margin lending or whatever it might be, you know, whatever their model dictates to the different assets, different products they're selling. But anyway, payment for order flow, Gary Gensler was against it. Gary Gensler, in a June speech, in June 5th of last year, this was the key speech, which basically blueprinted this entire market structure proposal that we've been talking about. In June, he gave a blueprint for it. And he talked about all these different proposals that we've already said. But there was one that he said, and I'm going to give you his words. He said, payment for order flow can distort order routing decisions. Okay, so why wasn't it included in the cleanup of the equity market, which is essentially what we're trying to do here? We're trying to add fairness, transparency, competition, yet payment for order flow is still going to exist. The reason why is because he can't get it through. They'll sue him. They've already threatened, they being the market makers, have said, if you try to ban something like that, and we use the word ban, we'll sue you. We'll drag it through court for years. And I think the chair recognized that, and he said, that would be kind of a waste of our resources and money if I spent 3-4 years with these guys in court. Maybe I can come up with a way to kind of essentially get rid of it by not banning it. And I think that's what he's doing with these tick sizes being reduced, the harmonization of the tick and quote size, the reduction in the access fees, all of those things. And this is how you have to think about these proposals. They're all going to work together. They're all going to interact into this soup, this market structure soup, which I don't really know if anybody knows how it's going to end up. And talk about unintended consequences. There could be all sorts of craziness coming out of this. But I think that's the intention here. The intention is, I'm getting rid of payment for order flow without getting rid of payment for order flow. And this is the way we're going to do it.
Yeah, it's kind of like getting Capone for tax evasion.
Exactly. You're going to jail, not for murder, but I'll get you on the taxes. Exactly.
Yeah, but that said, I don't necessarily think you think that Capone is going to jail in this story. I mean, these big guys that you're talking about are guys like Citadel, right? Which are just ferociously huge, deep-pocketed, and influential. So, you know, it's... you're nodding as I'm saying this, but
yeah,
you've already said you don't. Yes, all these things together could actually really throw some sand in the gears of the payment for order flow type models, but you don't expect all four of these to be implemented, maybe piecemeal parts.
Yeah, like I said, the retail order execution probably is already dead. I mean, I can't imagine, I haven't heard one person on the market making side, retail brokerage side, even on the institutional community, support that proposal. You know, like I said, some of those others will survive. So will he end up killing payment for order flow? You know, if you went down to a tenth of a penny, you would, but you're going to create whole new problems.
Right.
So that's why it's kind of like, you know, you're squeezing one end and it's going to come out the other side. That's what happened with Reg NMS. Reg NMS was supposed to break the duopoly of NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange and kill the specialists because they were robbing people. And instead it created high frequency trading, fragmentation, rebates, prop data feeds, and all this other mess. So we got to be careful. I mean, I'm so frustrated because I want to fix some of these things. And maybe you do it as one-offs. And maybe instead of doing them all together, you start with a tick size. And you say, okay, we're going to change the tick size here. And then we'll see how that works. And we can control the variables now. And then we'll go to the access fees. Or actually, I would go with access fees first. And then we start changing variables. Do in 6 months, do a report. You can kind of look at did it change liquidity? Did it change the way trading was? And by the way, liquidity is not 10 billion shares of volume a day. Liquidity is, can I access the volume that I want right now? Can I buy? Is there something out there for me? Can I access, you know, can I buy this stock? And if you're trying to trade small caps like we do all day long, it's really tough still. So even though you might see volume, there's no liquidity in many of these small cap names. So some of these things actually may be good. You know, and then maybe you go to a wider tick or something like that. But to put them all together and you drop them in at once, no, it would be a disaster, in my opinion, total disaster. That's not going to happen. But
okay, you know, the question I want to ask here is, and I don't want to sound too fatalistic, but like, you know, does just the people who have the advantage and those deep pockets, do they just have too much power in this story, right? In other words, you know, I think one thing we haven't really talked much about, but, you know, Gensler at the SEC, and look, I know some people have also some criticisms of him, and I'm not going to paint him as a complete angel here. But Joe, you said you think he's a good guy for trying to clean up what we're talking about here. But he's not just fighting Wall Street in its advantage here. He's fighting Washington, which is basically bankrolled by Wall Street, right? Yes. So, you know, a lot of the guys that are, you know, sitting there in Congress are hoping for a cushy board seat or whatever at some of these places. Even people inside, I'm sure, Gensler's own organization, you know, are probably, they've got that conflict of interest of like, look, you know, I know I'm going to have a much better future if I actually kind of bend the interests of the big Wall Street players. So, like, I know you'd love for us to do more here. And I guess my question is, can we, or do these guys just hold too much power here? And until we as a populace say, you know, we're going to elect people to whose specific mandate is to go defang these Wall Street guys, are we really just going to be sort of picking around the edges versus really being able to make any real reform?
Yeah, I think you hit it spot on. And it's not a partisan thing, because if you look at some of the donations either side, it is Wall Street up and down the, you know, I go to opensecrets.org all the time to see what some of these Congress folks are getting their money, financial services. I mean, it's never going to end. It's been that way for years. And that's why I said before, they're going to drag Chairman Gensler before the committees probably soon. And it's going to, you know, it's going to be a sideshow. It's going to be, hey, gotcha moments. They're going to look for that TV clip and do these, you know, all the retail investors never have it better. Why are you trying to screw the system up? No one's going to talk about what we're talking about today. They're not going to talk about the inner workings of price discovery and supply and demand, how supply and demand has been distorted by these players who have come out there. You know, it's not true price discovery anymore. They don't talk about that stuff. So that, number one, is going to be a problem. And like you said, there's this regulatory revolving door that's been there forever. They go from one regulator to the HFT firm, back to the next regulator, and they just keep circling around and around. And, you know, maybe there should be a rule that if you work at a regulator, you can't go to a private firm that you've been regulating for the last, you know, 5 years or something like that.
And why is there not a rule for that? Same thing for politicians too, right? Yeah.
Who writes the rules, right? So it's awful, which is why I'm frustrated. You know, you're not going to get everything done, which, you know, you can get pieces done here. You know, one thing that we didn't talk about, those proprietary data feeds that the exchanges sell. Why should they have the right to sell your information? Every time I hit a keystroke, every time I revise an order, cancel an order, place an order, they're selling it to people who are buying those feeds for a ton of money. And I have no way to opt out. I can't say you won't see this. And so put that, by the way, that's one, I wanted that in the proposals and it's not there. So that'll be in my comment letter as well. Why aren't proprietary data feeds opt out a bit? Why can't I have the ability to opt out?
Yeah, we do it for email. Why can't we do it for our trades?
Right. And by the way, how hard is it to opt out of half these when you go on an app and you want to, you can't find it. Why do I find this stuff? You can't do it. That's another problem. So the Congress are going to be a problem and they're going to put a sideshow on and it'll be, you know, frustrating. This thing will take time, by the way, months, if not years of back and forth. So even though we're talking about this today, I have a feeling we'll be talking about it in 6 months or a year from now. I'll come back on, I'll give you an update and we'll say, hey, where have we gone? Well, that's what happened with Reagan MS. It took years. It was proposed in 04, it didn't get implemented to 07. So you're probably looking at similar timelines.
All right. Well, we really appreciate you, you know, keeping us up to date on how all this stuff is going, really educating us, because I think most people, you know, who didn't know who you were before this information, Joe, probably were not very familiar at all with the many things that we've talked about here. So thank you for doing this hard work and, you know, writing the SEC with your feedback here. And so they read everything. Hopefully they read and actually listen to what you're proposing here. But, you know, from what I hear you saying is, yeah, you and I maybe are taking a fatalistic tone to a certain extent, but hey, you know, we do what we can. Right. And then we just hope that over time, you know, that accretes and you know, maybe something happens in the future where just the way in which the meme stock thing finally got Congress's attention enough to demand some reform, right, that we're putting enough on the table that when people really care, there'll be some solutions that are proposed out there that might actually get picked up at some point in the future. So real quick, as we wrap up here, Joe, is there anything that you, besides abolishing payment for order flow, that you would have loved to have seen in the SEC's document here that's not there?
Right. So I would have liked to have seen a wider tick bucket. In other words, something that would say, okay, you can only more than a penny. Because if a stock is trading at a, you know, currently a 5 cent spread, you know, maybe a 2 cent tick could be more appropriate. What I'm trying to do is build deeper liquidity buckets, okay, deeper price discovery buckets, and encourage, and this is a key point, I want to encourage more displayed liquidity and get away from the hidden stuff and the dark pools and all that, because what aids price discovery? More displayed liquidity. It will help price discovery. And if, again, going back to those corporations and the IR folks at the corporations, they should be writing this letter right now. They should be saying, I want better price discovery in my stock. I don't believe that 45% should get traded off exchange. 20% of exchange volume should be hidden. That doesn't make any sense to me as a corporation. So they should be looking at this and saying the same thing I'm saying right now. I think it'll help price discovery, where everything else that we're talking about is kind of hindering price discovery, if you ask me. A tenth of a penny tick size is ridiculous. It's going to hurt price discovery.
Okay, got it. All right. Well, Joe, look, you wrote the excellent book, Broken Markets, about a lot of your concerns with how the internal plumbing was being disabused. I actually see the cover of your book there Old behind book. You in the frame. Yeah. And you wrote that when, like 2014 or something?
2012. 10
okay,
years.
So 10 years ago. Yeah.
Still broken markets. That's a sequel.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of my question here, which is everything we're talking about today, obviously, I think, you know, is totally relevant to what you were warning about in the book. I guess what's your level of concern about the brokenness of the markets today versus when you wrote the book? Have things gotten better or have things gotten worse? And I guess they got worse for a while because of the whole HFT explosion mm-hmm. and everything that largely happened, you know, in force after the book came out.
Yeah, it has gotten, you know, refined, shall we say. Like the more competition that comes to every industry. So initially when they first came out, like I said, they had a field day, you know, the HFT is basically shooting ducks in a barrel. It was easy money for them. So it refined over the years, costs went up. The game changed. They found crypto, by the way, which they loved. And I think that took some of the heat off of the equity markets for a little bit. But now that crypto is dead, they'll be coming back over here again, playing some more. This is perfect, by the way. If you're a high frequency trader and you're going to a 10th tick, the new world is here, guys. Get ready. Get those computers ready because you're going to make billions again. You forget about crypto. We got 10th of a penny stocks. You're going to be killing it with your co-located feeds and your microwave antennas and your ridiculous, you know, prop data feeds. So all of those market. To answer your question, it's all still there underneath the belly of the beast, which is the other name for broken markets was, you know, the belly of the beast, you know, the beast underneath your bed. That's really what this is. It's a beast underneath something as simple as an equity market, you know, and unfortunately, when we try to improve things, we tend to complicate it and we make it worse sometimes. That's my big fear with these proposals, that it actually makes it worse and gives more opportunities for these no valuated high frequency traders who don't even know what they're trading and they're just looking to scalp pennies or half pennies or 10th pennies, right? So we'll see. But the best thing that everybody can do is, you know, educate yourself, keep learning, keep asking questions. Because what's been great since the meme stock events is Reddit's involved. There's all sorts of new groups out there. People are talking, asking sophisticated questions, which 5 years ago I never heard from retail that we're getting now. People understand the market structure, and that's the way you fight back. You understand it, you put transparency behind it, and then you write your letters, and they're not going to be able to ignore everything. So keep fighting.
All right. Well, you know, you described him as the beast under the bed. You know, I'll say like the monster under the bed, you know, it hides in darkness. And that's one of the issues around this, right, is so much of what's gone on is invisible to the eyes of almost everybody. It used to be invisible to the eyes of the regulators. I'm really glad, as I said earlier, that we now have the cat that seems to be sort of a full vision spectrum now. But obviously for most, every retail investor that's listening to this right now, they don't have visibility into this. All they know is they just click the buy or sell button, you know, on their... So basically to get that monster out into the light so that we can actually have honest discussion about it and whatever, you know, it takes people like you, Joe, that are taking what is a very opaque and at times very complicated subject and making it understandable for the average person. So thank you for everything that you're doing. You're also just underscoring something that I like to remind everybody after you come on the program here is you know, again, if you're making a dozen or less trades a year, you know, does this super impact you specifically? Yeah, not so much. I mean, yes, the funds that you own and whatnot are getting picked apart, you know, in their trades as they do this, but it's a bad thing for our overall financial markets in terms of the interest of retail investors. And it does behoove you, I think, to, when possible, work with the alliance of a professional financial advisor that at least is cognizant and understanding of these things that are going on. Now, Joe does that for institutions all day long, as he's mentioned here. But even on the retail side, you at least want your financial advisor to understand how the game is being played and make sure that they're not making themselves too big of a target. Obviously, if you've got a great one that does it already, stick with them. But if you don't, highly recommend that you talk to or at least just get a second opinion from one who does, and you're welcome to talk to the financial advisors that Wealthion endorses. You can do so by filling out the short form at wealthion.com and just setting up a free consultation to talk with them. It's free, doesn't cost you anything. There's no commitment to work with them. They just offer it as a public service to make investors better educated so that they can make more informed decisions about how to navigate their wealth in this very, you know, murky environment that Joe just described for us so well. Joe, thanks so much for coming on the program. Everybody, if you'd like to see Joe come back on again and update us when he's got a bit more information about this, please do me a favor and support this channel by hitting the like button and then clicking on the red subscribe button below, as well as that little bell icon right next to it. Joe, for folks that have really enjoyed this and would like to learn more about you and your work, where can they go?
I usually post on Twitter a lot. I'll go at Joe Saluzzi on Twitter. I'll put some of this market structure stuff out there. We have a blog on our website, themistrading.com, which I don't often update, but occasionally I will. But those are probably the best spots to find us.
Okay, great. And Joe, when we edit this, I'll put up URLs to those on the screen so folks know exactly where to go. Again, my friend, thanks so much for joining us and giving us such a great rundown here. Everybody else, thanks so much for watching.
Thanks, Adam.